Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Sarah Stefanelli.
And I'm Joseph Stefanelli. We're going to be taking you through The Sopranos one episode at a time, one podcast episode at a time.
We will be discussing Season 3, Episode 4, Employee of the Month.
What'd you think of this episode, Sarah?
Okay, so it's obviously a very, very tough episode to watch. Overall, I do think it's a good episode of The Sopranos. A lot of character development. Obviously, a lot happens that we have a lot to cover. Let's say that. Some topics easier than others. Joseph, you have mentioned before that there was three episodes of violence right in a row that David Chase kind of gave the audience because they wanted more violence. This is number one.
Number one, the father, if you will, of the Holy Trinity.
Okay, so this was, I think, the most violent episode we've seen so far.
I would agree.
Difficult violence to watch?
Well, it's a character that we love. It's a character we've known for, you know, 36 some odd episodes. So, of course, we're going to feel closer to her.
Well, okay, so I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I think the issue is that we've always said that they have a moral code. So a lot of the times when someone does get violently killed or violently hurt, we think in their world, this person deserved it. And I think it's really hard for us to watch Melfi get hurt because she truly didn't do anything wrong, clearly doesn't deserve what she went through. And I think that's why it's a different feel of the violence this time.
Yes. I also think we're both right. I think it depends how you're looking at the show. Okay. I can count on my hands, my one hand, violent moments that are as hard to watch as Melfi's attack. And is this the worst one? There's only one that I'm thinking about that
is comparable.
It is comparable, but yet this we see. The one that I'm talking about is definitely not as visual. Okay. It's more of the knowledge that something terrible is happening. We have some time for that. But this is
I know what you're talking about. Got it. Okay.
This is the first time that I watch a character that I truly love that, you're right, is innocent, does not break any moral code, whether it's theirs or ours, just societal. And we watch her, I mean, I'm watching it as a son, as a husband, and a father.
Right.
And then I watch a son and a father come in, and I understand their helplessness. Like, Jason, I don't think is mad enough. Like,
I know.
When he says, give me 5 minutes with him, oh, I don't need 5 minutes. I need a minute.
Yeah.
And by the way, and a brother, like I look at it all these different angles and you can't help but visualize things and hear the sound and it's awful.
Yeah. Okay. So we dove right in. Sorry, everyone.
But let me point out something before I read my summary. One, as always, this show does an amazing job of still giving me the chuckles. It still has those moments of levity that it's a normal Sopranos episode. The other thing that's worth noting is I don't think this episode is about Melfi being raped. I think this episode is about someone not giving their soul over to the devil. Whether the devil is Tony or the devil is their own self-consciousness, that's what this is about. And it kind of annoys me thinking about it to say, like, this is the episode where Melfi is raped. And I think that minimizes the whole point of the story. And I think that the character, I think the actress, and I think David Chase would say it's about a lot more than that. That's what I will say as we enter this episode. We're not just going to talk about that. I think it's important that you and I address it right away as we're doing, but I think we're going to surprise ourselves and our audience is going to be surprised of how much we talk about outside that 90 second moment.
Yeah. But also just get ready for when we talk about Richard. Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead. Your episode summary.
In one of the hardest hours of The Sopranos, Dr. Melfi is victim to a vicious attack in her office parking garage. Though the attacker is found quickly, he is released on a technicality and eventually awarded Employee of the Month by the local sub shop. Melfi's professionalism is tested to an extent she has never imagined. Meanwhile, Johnny Sack has moved to Jersey. Ralphie takes Jackie Jr. under his wing, and Russians ambush Janice in order to retrieve Svetlana's leg. This episode aired on March 18th, 2001.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. Okay. What is your favorite scene of this episode?
I could tell you which one's not, but...
Yes, I think we agree.
It's the final scene. It's that amazing therapy scene between them. The naked pause of, do you got something you want to say? And her no is just... I mean, it's one single syllable. It's one note on a piano. And it's one of the most beautiful line readings I've ever seen an actress give.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yes, listen, if she ever deserved awards, it's for this episode. And spoiler alert, she didn't win any ever for this series.
Which is a wild to me, but go on.
Well, she was up against Edie Falco every year. You know, if anyone's going to win, it's going to be Edie. But if I was going to give it to her, it'd obviously be for this episode. And she was nominated for this episode. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's for the attack. It's for that final scene. That's the award-winning moment.
And I would argue the other moments after the attack as well.
Sure, absolutely.
The whole, yes. How as an actress she handled the mess. I mean, there's so many messages in this that we'll get to. But I think that she portrayed something very difficult very well. So yours is the final scene.
Yes, I also have an honorable mention. I do love the scene between Chris and Tony.
I do, too. In the basement.
In the basement. I think that's just a great moment between great actors. And Chris is hardly in the episode, but yet he really does a beautiful job in that one moment.
Did you find it odd that he doesn't say, I love you back to Tony, or I love you too?
No, I think that's very purposeful.
Okay.
I think he's doubting his love at that moment. Christopher goes up and down with his love for Tony. I mean, deep down, he loves him. He's his uncle. He's his mentor. But Chris has moments where he does doubt. It's
not even his real uncle.
No, but cousin.
second cousin by marriage.
They're second cousin by marriage. But he's actually Carmela's cousin.
Right.
Second cousin.
Right.
Carmela and Dickie were cousins.
Yes, they're second cousins by marriage.
Yes.
So
No, but wait a minute. No, but Tony is blood related to Christopher's mother. Like he is second, third cousins to Christopher's mother.
Really?
They are. This is explained later by Adriana. I think in a moment of the audience keeps asking, so David Chase throws it in and Adriana explains it to somebody.
Oh, I didn't know that. So I think my favorite scene is actually also a therapy scene, but not the last scene, because they're in therapy twice after Melfi is raped. Mm-hmm. And Melfi and Tony are sitting there and I'm siding with Tony, right? He's so concerned for her. He knows something is up. And you're kind of sitting there going, tell him. Like, I'm rooting for her to tell him. And as you pointed out, that resounding no that ends the episode, we know that she's not going to tell him. But a few things to point out in this scene. Melfi says, I'm sorry, 3 times in a row. And it's so hard because it just highlights women's role in society when they are the victims, when something like this happens. And don't get me started about the scenes like leading up to this, right? So maybe the sorries that she says in therapy wouldn't be so in front and center, if you will, if we didn't just watch Richard suggest that it was Melfi's fault, this disgusting piece of crap of a man. Just, it's not my favorite scene, but I think it's the most memorable for this episode.
The therapy session, not Richard and...
The therapy, right. And I think I mentioned the Richard thing because I think it's an important piece walking into the scene, watching her and Tony, knowing that that happened. And she keeps saying, I'm sorry. So my runner-up is another therapy scene, but with Elliot and Melfi. And it's her saying that she loves the satisfaction of knowing that she could have this, in, you know, her quote, this employee of the month cocksucker, which I usually don't say that word on the show, but it's a quote that she says, squashed like a bug, right? And we're all sitting there, like, we all agree that we wanted her to tell Tony eventually, right? And we think in that moment she might, because she's so worked up, but I guess that's what she's telling us, that the satisfaction of knowing that she could is enough for her. So I thought that was a really good scene, too.
You know, in so many of this series, we talk about the jobs Tony does and the jobs he sends other people to do. And I always think it's interesting to, when you look at the murders on this show, who commits the actual crime. Like, I think it's interesting that he sent Paulie and Christopher to kill Mikey. I think, you know, I'm thinking of another particular one later. And Tony would have done this himself.
Do you
and this
think?
Would have been, yeah. And I think the brutality would have been worse than what we could even imagine. Like, ooh. I don't think you could film what Tony would do to him.
Ooh.
I don't think it's ever been filmed. Something so brutally violent. And that's what I keep thinking about. The satisfaction we'd get of watching him do that and be disgusted at the same time.
But all at the same time, rooting for him because I want this employee of the month guy to suffer.
I'm on a lot of, you know, social media when it comes to, you know, I'm in groups on Facebook, like anything with the word Sopranos, I'm usually part of it. And I read little things and people like to go on and just ask random questions. What's your favorite moment? What's your favorite part of season four? What's your blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And often is, what is the moment you wish went a different way? And this is always it. People just want her to say yes.
Right. Oh, God.
But again, not to get formulaic about it, it's an anticlimax.
I know.
It's almost obvious that she's going to say no.
I know. And it really feeds into my theme as well. But let's start with our favorite quotes first, because we're going to dig ourselves out of this hole a little bit right now, because the quotes that came out of, which I think is purposeful. Like you said, it really, the writing allows us to still chuckle during this hour because I think we needed it. They knew that. Sure. The lines
and the same
that
goes for the next two episodes. The same goes
oh,
for the next
good,
two.
Great. This
which are terribly violent, but yet, but some of the most memorable, funny moments of the show.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't even know how to feel about that, but I guess thankful. I don't know. I really don't know. Okay, but I have a bunch of favorite quotes, and so do you. You have a bunch.
I never do, but I did. I did
okay,
a lot of.
I think we have to go back and forth for our favorite quotes.
You start.
Okay. When Melfi says to Richard, I believe it's the opening scene of the episode, she says,
Richard, we're an advertisement for the American experiment. We did great.
I think that's just really, I love that because I think a part of us, Richard is complaining again. We've heard him have this complaint before in season one that the Italian Americans are portrayed horribly in the media, which he's not wrong, but we know that this is his thing, right? He's really right. Bugged by this. And I think they're setting us up because this episode is going to be the worst we've seen yet with crimes that Italians have committed. And we see that when we realize that Richard realizes that this guy's name is Rossi, an Italian name, blah, 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 blah. So I think like it's a part of it. So she kind of comforts us. Like we did great. So right. I like that. I thought it was a good delivery.
But she's also saying, we're on the highest, most popular television show of all time. Yeah. We're doing great. She is.
I know, but it's portraying Italian Americans in a bad light.
We make a lot of money doing this show. So my favorite quote is a Furio who has no lines, but we don't have a bulb joke. They don't translate.
How many Nubbledons does it take to screw in a light bulb?
There's only candles in Naples right now. The Cardinal of the Church controls that racket.
That's a good one.
You like it, you can have it. Use it on your paisans.
We don't have those bulb joke. They don't translate.
Joseph, for an actor and an Italian man, you have a horrible Italian accent.
I've been told that I don't do accents well. My wife gets so annoyed when I do accents.
Really, like, I mean, listen, I let you go on the show because you love Furio, but like, that's not, I'm not good at them either. Okay, but that's a good line. That's funny. That's a funny moment. That's great. Okay. Ralphie to the guy he's beating up, showing Jackie Jr. what's up.
Hey, what is all this, Ralphie? How to stick a shish kebab up your ass.
This is awful because this is sad. People really do struggle with a lot of mental illnesses. But when she says on the phone, "I know talking on the phone upsets you, but I need to cancel. I'm sorry." That's one of the, for an episode that's so dark, for them to go into kind of this dark comedy territory where we're going to mock her patient, or maybe I'm just an asshole. They are mocking, right? Her delivery's a little mockery.
I think it's both. I think we're assholes, but also it's funny.
I'm sorry. That's fine.
And you're also just like, she's so tough. You're like, oh my God, she's still thinking about her patients. And I would be like, call my patients and tell them. Like, I think I wouldn't. She just, you know, went through like a hell.
Richard, call her patients.
I don't know if that's allowed. He can't know who her patients are. Like, there's no secretary or something at her building.
Send a text. Didn't they have that in 2001?
No, they even had that.
Ugh, awful.
This person who doesn't like talking on the phone would probably love text messaging. Let's get them into the future. Yeah.
We solved the problem.
Wait, there you go. So when Melfi calls the house and Carmela says, "It was your therapist." And Tony says, "Why don't you just announce it on WFAN? And then he turns to the maid and says,
"Go find some dust."
Carmela's quite bitchy in this episode, particularly at that moment.
You know, Carmela has had two moments now where she is mean and suspects Tony because of women who called the house. And there are two moments where Carmela, like, I don't blame her, but really not the time, Carm. So it was with Irina, when Irina attempted suicide.
Right.
And now Melfi's calling the house and she just went through a horrible crime. And it's like, again, I don't blame Carmela because she doesn't know, but it's like, Carm, come on.
It's funny you say that. Because you're right, and there's a callback to that, because that's actually the opening scene. It's not Melfi and Richard, it's Irina calling the house.
There you go.
Melfi
calling the house. Irina calling the house.
No, the first scene
of the episode is
Irina calling the house.
Absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Which is a nice little callback, and I wonder if that was put there too, because it doesn't serve any other purpose. Well, other than to tell us about the leg. It reminds us about the leg.
I wish I put that in my symbolism.
But that's a moment that might be a little callback. Like, remember the last time she called and you can see the concern on Tony's face. So maybe that's why we're supposed to make that connection.
There you go.
I still have more quotes. Johnny calling the guys fucking illiterates.
What? It's all over 10-10 wins. It's right there in front of you, you fucking illiterates. Turn it up.
Was fantastic.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Like.
Well, and after they were just really making fun of his wife.
Oh.
And he walks in on it and they play it so cool. Like, they all shut up, but Tony just plays it.
Because they do it all the time. Because they do it all the time.
I can't. One line I loved was Melfi to Richard saying, "The whole world is about your self-esteem. Well, maybe you don't have enough."
Oh, fuck
fucking words about your self-esteem. Or maybe you don't have enough.
What a line. Yeah. So good.
We go back to our FBI guys. Remember, because they're still sitting in a van
somewhere.
They're
still hanging out. Yeah.
Down by the river. And when they listen to one of my favorite scenes.
Oh, but it's all right for me. I didn't say that. And what else did you say? That the life's good enough for me, but not for little Lord Fuckpants?
Little Lord Fuckpants? Whose moniker is that?
I'm not sure it is a moniker.
And like, well, whose code name is that? Like, they think it's a name. Dumbasses. So good. When Tony is talking to Janice, who has no concern for Janice, because again, like, it's not good that Janice got beat up by Russians, but a part of you's like, did you deserve this?
Right.
You were warned. You stole a person's leg. Like, it's like this. Anyway, so when he says to her, all this soul searching, Janice, is always on my fucking dime. Really good line. Really good delivery. Another good sibling scene. They really have had good sibling scenes this whole season.
From my understanding of the show, because they knew each other before the series, they had worked together. They were in Streetcar Named Desire on Broadway together. And apparently their relationship.
And what was he?
I think she was one of the other wives. Like, you know, some of the wives are in the house sometimes.
Sure.
And he was not Stanley. He was the other guy. He was the guy that Blanche should date.
Oh, okay.
Alec Baldwin was Stanley Kowalski in that production. And that's how they became friends. That's why Alec Baldwin's such a fan. But anyway, they very much had a brother-sister relationship. My last favorite quote, though. First one from Gigi. I don't think I've had a Gigi quote.
Who's a captain now.
Who's good a captain.
Good for Gigi.
Oh, fucking Gigi. My God. When Gigi says, and the property taxes, and you gotta pay those.
You gotta pay those.
Like, as if.
So, that is just, it's perfect. Deep. Like, that's perfect. You gotta pay those.
I like Gigi. I like Gigi a lot. Ralphie does not like Gigi.
No, I don't think he's a fan. I don't think he's a fan.
No, he's good though.
No. Okay, so our theme of the episode.
So let's share with the audience. I forgot. I did the whole episode.
You did.
I took note after note. And then you texted me yesterday and went, you didn't put a theme. And I just didn't. So I'm trusting you. Go.
But you know what it is. So we alluded to this in the beginning. You said this episode is big. The message is bigger, right, than the things that happen within the episode. And it's about not giving our soul up to the devil, right?
Yes.
I agree. I think you got the theme. But taking it a little more literally for what happens in this throughout this episode, I really think it's that take back to a reminder that the good people are bad and the bad people are good and they have values. And justice is served in our world of the mafia better than it ever would be in the courts. This whole Melfi storyline is very, very similar to Bonacero's storyline in The Godfather. His daughter.
I never really thought of that. You're
his
right.
His daughter is beat horribly by two American boys, Metagons.
Like an animal.
And he goes through watching the courts let them go. And, you know, in this episode, it's a mistake, right? That they make a mistake and they're not suitable to do their job. And he goes to the Don and asks for justice through the mafia. Like, we're watching Melfi toy with this idea. We know that she doesn't, but it's the same message.
I never thought of that. You're right. You're 100% right.
So I'm going to go through a few things that relate to who's good, who's bad, right? So the rapist piece of garbage is awarded employee of the month. So he's seen as good, but we know that he's not.
Tony, he knows how to make a sub. He knows how to make a good sub.
He makes a mean sub. He could do customer service. Is literally a piece of shit. Like, who?
And all kidding aside, his name is Jesus.
Okay.
Yeah, his name, I mean, is that they pronounce
it? Okay, well, he's literally going to burn in hell. And I'm looking forward to that day that he does that. So Tony can bring justice where the U.S. justice system can't. And we know that. And we know that we're satisfied by knowing that. And we need to be okay with it because Melfi's okay with it. Jackie is supposed to stay out of trouble and go to college and be, you know, the quote, good one kid. But he won't, or he can't help himself. Richard is supposed to be this upstanding Italian citizen, but he is victim blaming and a greasy old dirtbag. even with Jason, Melfi's son, when he's so angry, right? Like, he is the good citizen, but like you said, and I believe it too, you know, he absolutely would have murdered his mother's attacker if you let him in the room. He says, give me 5 minutes. Like, he would be dead.
Which I'm okay with.
But that's the theme. It's these, right. I'm with this person who is supposed to be good, but he's going to do a bad thing, and I support it. The Russians seem like the bad guys, this whole storyline with Janice, but they're actually doing an extremely honorable thing by getting Svetlana's leg back after a very long time, and Janice being politely asked. And not that I support beating Janice, but in their moral code, they're a part of the Russian mob. She's a part of the Italian mob. Tony warned her. Like, maybe I'm the victim blaming dirtbag, but I still think it's different. I think it's different in Janice's case.
Justice for Richard.
Wow. Just so everyone knows, our names show up when we record, and I signed on tonight to record at Joseph's name is just We Hate Richard, and I read it as We Hate Richard. What does that mean? Okay, I have one last one, and I'm sure there's other examples that maybe throughout this episode that we could get to, but Ralphie, who we know is a butt wipe, but he gives like good feels in the weirdest way this episode with Jackie.
He's oddly fatherly.
Oddly fatherly, he's giving this attention. He takes him out to dinner. He wants to get to know the kid. He's concerned. He brings it up with Tony later, and Tony ignores him to tell him that Gigi's a captain.
Right.
And, you know, and it's just another example of, we know Ralphie's not good, but in this episode, he's good. In a weird way, because he's like showing Jackie how to be in the mob and beats a guy up, but In our world, this was a good thing.
I have nothing to add. That was wonderful. It was beautiful.
Brilliant.
If you were one of my students, solid A minus. Really.
A minus?
Well, for me, that's a lot. That's, I don't give A's out like they're cotton candy. It's hard to get an A.
You don't give A's out to your kids?
I give A's if they deserve them. Let's talk about symbolism.
Okay.
Go back and forth?
Yeah, I think we should go back and forth. So, well, okay. Actually, my first symbol is a question. What does Tony give Johnny in the pirate treasure chest thing when he goes to see him at his house?
Gold bullion and seaweed.
Okay. like golden chalices.
I honestly have no idea.
Okay, because I thought maybe that was some symbol, but it's just weird.
It almost looks like moose meat or venison. Like it's some kind of meat that's gonna come
weird
in a box.
I thought maybe it's cigars, alcohol, but it doesn't really look like that.
I have no idea. I know it's not the real gift because Carmela's bringing the real gift,
the nice gift to the housewarming.
So I have no idea. It's a very good question.
Okay, go on. You can go first then with your first symbol.
I love the parallel that Tony fails to, quote, keep a log of his thoughts, but then his strength is shown later in the episode when this big hulk of a man chops the log. That is, like, fantastic. Wow.
Good catch.
And that's the camera angle, like, looking, him looking down on it makes him look so big and powerful. Like, this is what you're going to do to Jesus Rossi. Like,
wow. Yes. Love that. Well done. There's a lot of there's a motif of jokes in this episode. Ralphie says a few, and obviously the guys are talking about Ginny's weight. Just a lot of just like one-liner jokes throughout the whole episode. probably to keep it light.
But what are they symbolized?
It's a motif. It's just, where do I put motifs?
Okay. Okay. Melfi drops a soda after seeing Rossi's photo, which obviously now this soda kind of represents her attack. The soda machine, literally in her dream, represents the how she gets trapped. So.
I say not a dream. That's definitely a nightmare. So Johnny's on it. Okay. Stick with me for this one. Johnny's unimpressed by his great room, right? The great room. And he says, there's a living room right over there. And I think it's a parallel of being unimpressed by New Jersey when real life is right over there in New York City.
Why'd you need me to follow that? I think that's true. You think you're stretching on that one.
I thought it was a little bit of a reach.
No, I think it's a great. I think that's very awesome. Great.
Love it. That's why I made it up for putting a motif randomly in the symbolism.
Was it in the Jess episode about the funeral or the fortunate son where we talked about great rooms?
No,
oh, it was Jess. The funeral because they're in the great room.
Yeah.
It made me think of this.
That
Johnny Sack was eventually going to do this. I often always forget that this is the episode that Johnny moves to Jersey. I forget that. And, you know, in my 40, 50, 60 times watching it, I forget every time.
It grows. Weirdly, like every time we get together.
Going back to Jesus, Jesus, Janice turns to Jesus after an act of violence. And in contrast, Melfi lets Jesus go because she's dropping it. By saying no, she's going to let that man out of her life. So these two women that were both attacked are taking that name and doing different things with it. Similarly, Janice is a great contrast because she allows Tony to go after her attacker. She right. knows
she gives
he's
him
going.
Permission.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that very interesting. So Johnny says, "I got my family, and there's the Soprano family." Right after he says he's not going to stick his beak in, a bird reference.
Well,
but then right after he says the family thing, he then asks Tony for help with his rain bird. And we know that birds equal the family. And Johnny's definitely going to be a part of it now. Spoiler alert. He's
going to stick his beak in.
Definitely
he's
going to
stick his beak in. It's a big beak. I mean, he's going to struggle.
So, yeah. So the bird symbolism is always kind of tossed in there, right?
Yes. Yes. I have no idea what this symbolizes, but there's definitely a parallel that back in season one with Big Girls Don't Cry, Chris attacks the guy in the bordello with his wife. Not as much as Furio does. That's the one that Furio eventually shoots in the knee. But during that minor little attack, he destroys the guy's model car. And then in this episode, Ralphie destroys the model plane when he attacks Aruk, which I thought, like, why? What's the thing with models? And even their office looks the same. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the same set, just a different dressing.
So that's interesting. So in Big Girls Don't Cry, we said it was a childlike symbolism strewn throughout the episode. We said it was toys, but I don't see that connection here. But
not
hear me out. Is it a cannoli just having a model mode of transportation?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a stretch.
I don't know. I'd have to like poll listeners if they're going, yes, Sarah, we know exactly what you're talking about. Or if some people are going,
usually they do. They're usually on my side. Okay, we got to break down this.
Becca texts you and says, I agree with you. Yeah. Doesn't mean all our listeners.
Becca and Katie, you're right.
Are on the side.
So we got to break down this nightmare dream thing. So you said the soda already. So the soda, yes. But also the macaroni is the Italian way of justice that she wants to use and needs. But she knows it's a trap, like the vending machine becomes to her. Obviously, she puts together that Tony is the dog if she needs him. But at the end of the dream sequence nightmare scene, she's still stuck in the vending machine, right? There's no good resolution.
Yep.
For Melfi, and she knows that in her subconscious through her nightmare.
Also, and that's beautiful, a layout, what you just put there, but I want to throw out that throughout this show, macaroni has been referred to as a way of talking about money. We talked about this with when we did The Happy Wanderer.
You're
how
right.
many boxes of ZD.
Yeah, you're right. I love yeah. that. Cool.
So
very cool.
I have never noticed how often Adriana wears red until this podcast.
It's a lot.
It's striking how often she wears the same shade of red.
Oh,
but a different outfit.
It's bright red and it's one solid color often. It's not like she has a red shirt on with jeans. It's like she her whole outfit is red.
It's often. Almost like a bride said, here's a swatch of material. You pick the outfit. And she just got seven.
Like, right. She's the bridesmaid and just wearing yes. red. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Tony, when Carmela answers the phone and it's Melfi, he walks in the room when she's still on the, when Carmela's still on the phone with her. Tony asks, who ate the last piece of cake? Which made me chuckle when he's in the fridge. Mm-hmm. But then when he's really concerned about Melfi, he's eating a piece of celery. So he chooses something really healthy instead when he realizes that it's Melfi.
And I think it's the only time I've ever seen him eat a vegetable.
It stood out to me as why are you just it's like fucking Bugs Bunny over here just eating.
Jan is trying to learn ain't got no satisfaction. I think it's just because that's her whole story. She just can't find satisfaction.
Well done. I'm impressed you could even pick that out in her.
I mean,
I didn't even hear it. Like
it's
I
rough.
Couldn't understand. There's some parallel here with Tony calling Johnny out for not telling him that he moved to New Jersey, which I do think that's weird that he didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then Melfi saying she never said anything about that when the detective Pearsall
yes.
moved to juvie. And it was weird. Like she was offended that she had this connection with this person who was helping her. She didn't mention that. Like you should have told me. There's just a weird parallel there that I noticed.
And both about moving.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good call. I did not catch that. Your beautiful theme. I think oddly enough, Ralphie nails it in quoting Gladiator, which was a huge movie then. And we were all quoting Gladiator because we all thought we were real men. Boom, for Gladiator.
That's one of Christian's favorite movies. But what's his favorite movie?
Muppets Christmas Carol.
Muppets Christmas Carol.
And the quote is, what we do in life echoes in eternity. And that's Melfi's ultimate decision. She is going to heaven because she doesn't sell her soul to Tony Soprano. So great job stealing a quote, giving credit to Gladiator. It's not like they stole it, but
yeah.
That's the quote.
That's a really good call out. And it's what she's struggling with, like, obviously on top of her attack. Like, do I tell him or not? Do I go to hell for him?
Forgive me for saying this, but I think in an odd way, that's more of her struggle. The attack happened. It's how she responds to it now is going to be the problem.
I don't know, Joseph. That's a tough... I don't know if I agree with you on that one.
You ask Becca what she thinks.
Oh, because she's going to say I'm right?
Right.
So, you know, going actually off of her her reaction to this, right? So Melfi wanting to the control over her situation is very real. So when Richard really needed to give her the phone, when he wouldn't give her the phone and then he calls back and finally he does give her the phone, but he really does not handle this. I mean, she needs control over her situation and he won't give it to her right away. And yeah, he did eventually. And now she has to leave the house knowing that this guy is out there and he blames her, which like absolutely fuck you, Richard. I mean, Melfi says it to him in the same scene. She said it well. And then here she says, later he walks into the bedroom and she's laying on the bed. And she says, I'm sorry, again. And he says, I'm just so frustrated. Not, no, I'm sorry. He says, oh, I'm just so frustrated. He gives an excuse for his behavior. And she's still apologizing to all of these men in her life for getting hurt.
Do you
can you
think,
tell I'm worked up about it?
I can, as you should be. As you should be. And I think, I don't know statistically, but I'm sure that someone who deals in this area would say that this is accurate.
Well, that's what I was saying, that I think Lorraine Bracco really like just represented this situation fairly well. I mean, yeah, I agree with you.
Just a side note, they're not together in after this episode. It's this one weird standalone episode, which quite frankly is a little sloppy, I think, bringing them back together just so she's with him. But fine, I can accept it. You know, married people get back together. It happens. But there'll never be again. Do you believe at the end of this episode she's no longer with Richard?
Yes.
Or do you think it takes time?
No. I think this could be the, no, he's an asshole. I'm done with him. Come on. Come on. It has to be. I mean, they already obviously were kind of on the rocks. And she's lived a life without him already and knows that she can. She's out of there. She's out of there.
I agree. After he does this, come back, though.
Yeah, but as Jason's dad, not correct. Her husband. And that is okay, and that's different. I think this is it for her, though. Come on. She's smarter than that. All right. So, Joseph, what does the title mean?
I mean, the obvious, of course, is he's the employee of the month.
And I hate that the episode's named after this guy, but go on.
Okay,
I know.
I'll take it further.
I know.
I don't think it's only named after him. Obviously, he's the
literal
one. But it's ironic in a lot of ways because a lot of the guys are kind of going against their quote employer. They're not doing what a good employee does, just like Jesus Rossi does not do what a good person does. Johnny moving to Jersey, he says Carmine's not happy about it. Ralphie brought Jackie on a job. Tony's not happy about it. Even Melfi, you know, not pushing Tony to a behavioral specialist, which she knows in her heart would be better for him. But now she's not going to. She, even though she's not using him, she wants him close.
But
so
I get,
she's.
I get that.
Oh, me too.
Wait, well, and Elliot even said to her, it's a basic human instinct to want to be protected. He says that to her about Richard, and then she says no to Tony. I mean, I get it. I'd want him in her life as well.
Technically, she's Tony's employee. You know, he pays her.
She's not doing
what's good for him. And then this isn't in that realm, but the idea of Gigi is basically given employee of the month. Here's your reward
over
Ralphie, who in reality probably should get it. I think it's been established even in only two episodes that Ralphie is the better earner, that Ralphie is the guy that's next in line.
Yeah.
Tony just doesn't like him.
Do you think?
Which happens.
No, I think Tony gives him a good reason. He's very hot-headed. He even says, you know, I struggle with hot-headedness too, and I recognize it in people. And he said, I don't agree with you on that one, because he even gives him examples. Hey, did you really think that was a good decision the other day? And, you know, you brought Jackie to beat up this guy. Like, you have anger decision. You know, it doesn't empower him to make good decisions because he has anger issues. I mean, I think it's actually, I don't think that's why he's not captain. I think Tony has very valid reasons. More than
so. If your boss didn't give you a promotion and gave you those reasons, you'd go, okay.
I'd accept that more than I don't like you.
Have you ever had an employer tell you they don't like you?
I'm really likable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah,
I understand.
It's like really difficult.
You're just perfect.
Have you ever had an employer tell you they don't like you?
Not to my face.
Our most valuable Goomba.
AJ.
Jaggy. Melvin.
Absolutely. You know, I know we're not supposed to take in the actress, but I mean, Lorraine Bracco just gives an amazing performance throughout from minute one to minute 60. It's amazing.
Yep. Brilliant performance. And I do think Melfi's character sets up the theme. It makes us think about what would we do.
The first time I think we've given it to Melfi.
No, please. This is season 3, baby.
I don't. I'd have to go back. I'm not. Well, we have records.
Yeah, I know. We've definitely given it to Milfy. I don't know if I care enough to go back and check, but I think we definitely have given it to Milfy. Or one of us has, and we fought about it, I assume.
Maybe. If we pulled this shit or something that made us go, oh my God, that's us. For a episode as dark as this, I had a few.
I agreed with a lot of yours.
You want to do yours? Why don't you do yours, and then I'll
Well, there's a line that even before I watched The Sopranos, like, you stole this joke from Syl, and I used to tell people how funny my brother is because I thought you made it up.
But I said this to you?
Yes, and I tell the story as if it was you, and then I watched The Sopranos, and I went, he stole this joke from Syl? So I... one time texted you, like, I don't know. I was, like, trying to figure out what my blood type was, like, years and years ago. And I was like, Joseph, do you happen to know just because, like, you're older than me? Like, I don't know. I'm like, do you know what my blood type is? And you said, Ragu. And I was like, it was so funny. And it's really just Syl saying Ginny's so fat that her blood type is Ragu.
Well, I'm going to say something, though, but that joke is not an original Silvio. That's kind of an old joke.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know two people in my life who have said it. You and Syl. That's it.
Like, I'm sure Dad has said that at some point. Possibly about himself. Like,
yeah, I didn't know that one. Anyway, I think it's very funny.
What were your thoughts about, to get to the fun stuff, what were your thoughts about Meadow's little speech to her father?
I thought it was random and strange.
What, I don't get a hello?
I need $200 for November to put in my student account.
You don't talk to me for weeks, but my money's still green.
I'm looking forward to total independence, believe me. African Americans go to Columbia, Dad. Some of them are my friends.
Friend my ass under a blanket on my couch watching television with his shoes off. With you.
Meadow, when did you get here?
Now fuck off, Meadow.
But what, I feel like it didn't... Okay, so we went from the last episode from her delivering that, what, burning across. Like, that was funny and, like, really good. Then she went to this other line where it's like, this didn't fit. Like, what are you doing? I thought it was
Yeah.
It's like, the literal writing didn't make sense. I just didn't. It was weird.
I'm looking forward to total financial independence.
I mean, that was kind of funny.
Please.
That was kind of funny. But it was weird, the whole thing.
Can you imagine for a moment anybody making out at a party the way Chris and Aide were at Johnny's? Why were they making out against the house like that?
So unbelievably strange. There are grown adults who are fiancés.
Right. Why are they? I think it's very. And they have no reason to be there, even.
So strange. So strange that they had them doing that.
And I usually love Chase and the directors putting in little details because that's what life is full of. But that was one that was very out of character. Like, I'm actually surprised that Michael Imperioli and Drea D'Amato didn't go, why are we doing this?
Yeah, like, why? We wouldn't just be making out in the corner.
Like, where everyone can see them. And Tony walks out and doesn't blink an eye, you'd think Tony would go, knock it the fuck off.
He would do one of the head slaps up the neck.
Yes, get a room.
And that would have been funny. And that would have been funny.
That was just very weird. But the ultimate, and though it is in time order, my list, this had to be the end. Them talking about what it cost to buy that house.
What do you think a place like this, said John Beck? Who gives a shit?
Fucking landscape alone's got to be 100, 150 G's. And to keep up this lawn,
property taxes, and you got to pay those.
I have not stepped into a house for the first time with my parents without either whispering to each other or on the way home going, how much do you think that cost, that house?
Really?
But,
I've never once had any of that conversations with mommy and daddy ever in my life.
You've never walked into a house and go, how much do you think they pay for that house?
No.
You don't drive home from weddings with mommy and go, what do you think that wedding cost them? What, you don't?
No.
Or set you back. Paulie's use of words. How much you think this set back?
Like the landscape thing alone. No, I'm like, I kind of disagree with you. I don't think our parents do that.
Okay, well, we'll be talking to them. Yes, they do. They're listening going, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Well, dad is. Mom's not.
Mom's because mommy doesn't listen.
Mom doesn't like this. She don't like you cursing. This moment also reminds me of Sebastian Maniscalco. You're a fan of his stand-up,
I love
right?
Him.
He does a whole great routine about Italians at a, I think it's a wedding though. Italians at a wedding. What do you think this cost him? And he even says, like, you know all the people here tonight? You're all gonna go home going, did you see how many people there? How much you think he made doing this one night? That's how Italians are. We just want to know how much everything
that's funny.
Was.
That's funny. Cannolis.
Hold on. Could we get Sebastian Maniscalco on this show? You think he would do it?
Stop it.
Okay.
If Sebastian, hold on. If Sebastian was famous during the time of The Sopranos, he would have made it. He would have been on the show.
Yeah, well, he's in The Irishman, and he's quite good in The Irishman.
Yes. I also still believe that he would have been like a small character on The Sopranos.
Gigi. He would have been a good Gigi.
He would have been Gigi. Exactly. He just would have been Gigi.
Cannolis.
Cannolis. Don't mess with the Russians.
Good one. This is a closed one, but Richard represented the audience who wanted to drop The Sopranos in season one, and now he literally tells Melfi to drop Tony Soprano.
Love it. We see a hint of Ralphie's calm, yet anger issues. When he tells the brother-in-law he needs anger management himself. Arik, is it you said his name is?
Arook.
The guy, the shish kebab up his ass. He says to him, like, you have anger management issues. But Ralphie's calm in his unreasonable anger, kind of setting the scene that he's really, really terrifying. Highlighting when Tony says, so you send his brother-in-law on an ambulance ride? And Ralphie says, very calmly, he said a very bad word.
Which is what? What's the very bad word?
He called him a WAP.
Oh, God.
It's very, the way he says it, you're like, wow, you're scary. Well, he said he almost says it kind of like a little creepy kid in a horror movie. Like, well, he said a really bad word. Like, you're like, oh, God. Okay. So I think all of that is a cannoli.
I don't know if you'd call this a cannoli or closed cannoli or parallelism, but Janice finds God in this act of violence, which very much reminded me of when Carmela finds God, Lee a little bit more, after Christopher's shooting. It's a hospital.
Yeah.
They're both talking. Obviously, Janice is in the bed.
Yeah.
Carmela's not, but.
She, she also finds God in college. go on.
Whoa. You totally went there.
But
Richard
also,
tells
where is that guy? Where is Father Phil?
He's coming. He'll be back.
Okay.
He'll be back. This is a huge one, and I'm gonna think not intentional, but okay. Richard tells Melfi that Tony is conning her.
You know, he's an expert at this, Jen. The guy's conning you.
Condescend to me, Richard. It gets me so hot.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm very intrigued.
Okay.
Go on.
Carmela being invited to therapy.
Yep.
Ralphie tells Jackie how attractive Meadow is.
Which, let's talk about that for a second. That's disgusting.
I mean, yes, it is, but...
He's like
he
being
doesn't say,
weirdly father figure.
Yeah.
She's also, this is so weird, but she is also an adult.
Right. Like it really, he's just saying she's attractive. Like
I guess.
You should date her.
Like, yeah.
What does he call her? A mink?
Yeah. A minx?
I've never heard that term.
A minx?
No, I think he says mink. Is it minx, he says?
Is it one of your malapropism shit?
Oh, maybe that's what it is. It's a malapropism. You're absolutely right. It's a malapropism. Johnny's saying he has no intention of sticking his beak in. He does. This I thought was really, and I was proud of myself on this one.
Okay.
So Janice hides the leg. Janice hides the leg in a locker at a bowling alley. And later in the series, Tony is going to refer to Svetlana as having only one pin.
That's phenomenal.
I was like, ooh.
That's phenomenal.
Making fun of Johnny's wife, Ginny's weight. There is literally an episode called The Weight. Literally, that's the episode. It's called The Weight.
They're such assholes.
So that's going to come back. So there was a lot in this episode that I was like, oh.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's a deep one. Anything else?
Yeah, I got a few things.
Yeah?
I do. Rapid fire back and forth?
Sure.
I feel like this has become a theme of mine that my anything else always starts off with welcome to the show.
I love that.
Welcome Denise Barino Quinn, who plays Ginny Sacramone. Her first appearance, which it kind of feels like she's been around for a while.
We thought she was in the episode with the funeral. Remember, me and Jess were like, Ginny was there.
She was not, just another fat one. There's a very interesting story about her because I remember this distinctly. In the year 2000, there was an open call, which is not a good idea for the most popular show in America.
But they didn't know it was going to be the most popular show. Oh, I guess it was.
No, it already started after season one.
Gotcha.
They do an open call, and Harrison, New Jersey is where our mother grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this open call, and I remember the pictures in the paper. Every fat Italian guy comes dressed as Tony Soprano, and every woman comes as either Melfi or Carmela or Adriana. Which is stupid. They're not looking to recast the Sopranos, right. You dipshits. They're looking for other characters. And this woman shows up with her friend, but they liked her look. They asked her to read, and she was the only person from that 1,000 people open call to get a role on The Sopranos. And she ended up doing 17 episodes as Ginny Sacramone.
She's the character, yeah.
She's wonderful. And unfortunately, she died of liver cancer in 2010.
I'm sorry to hear
that. But lost all the weight. She was not because of the liver cancer. After the show, she lost weight.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So. Cool.
I think it's wild that Melfi slips and says Tony's name to Elliot. Mm. I think that's like, that was a gasp moment for me. And her too, but. Ooh, and then. It's also very funny when she says, Elliot, please, huh, with the terminology. It just kind of, again, it's that meta reminding us that it's a genre and all of it. I thought that was so funny.
And I'm going to piggyback on yours. And then he goes, I always thought it was that other guy, Augie April.
Who the fuck is
Augie April?
Who is Augie April?
Like, obviously, there's April.
There's someone. I have no idea.
Who's Augie?
I don't know.
Can we talk about the Emmys? Let's talk about the Emmys.
Go ahead.
So, this episode won for best writing of a drama series. Robin Green and Mitchell Burgess, who wrote many, many amazing episodes. They are a married couple.
Nice.
And I believe this was their first and only Emmy for the series. But they tended to write the episodes that were about home life. They tend to write the marriage episodes.
Okay.
Which is another reason why I kind of look at this as not about A, but about the result. It's about what's going on, like you said, with Richard being such an awful guy. So I'm going to give them that.
Well, and also real quick, though, like, so the family life thing, the scene with, obviously, we've said it's very hard to watch the scene. But watching her try to be strong for her son when she walks in the room right after it happens, that split my heart in two because her demeanor changes.
Yeah.
What being as a woman watching it, and you know, I don't have a son, but you see her change to try to be strong for someone else. And it really, like, that split my heart in two a little bit for, you know, a different reason. It's just,
it's awful.
That it's a tough one.
In that same year, the nominees for best lead actress in a drama are Lorraine Bracco, The Sopranos, for this episode. Amy Brenneman, Judging Amy. Ugh. Marge Helgenberger for CSI, Crime Scene Investigation. Stop it. Seal Award, Once and Again. I don't remember Once and Again. I don't give a shit about Once and Again. But I do think Seal Award never got her due. I think she was an amazing actress. And the winner, Edie Falco for The Sopranos, for an episode we've yet to see. But quite a good one.
Okay, do you think Lauren Bracco is pissed? That's actually a general question. Do you think that when your own co-star wins, they can truly be happy for each other? I think they can. It depends on the circumstance.
Sure. I will tell you this. I make fun of The West Wing a lot. But in the first four seasons, every supporting actor won for a season. In fact, they all won for Christmas episodes.
Oh, fun.
In fact, in season three, John Spencer is the main character of the Christmas episode. And Aaron Sorkin personally went to his house and said, here's your Emmy Award. Because two of the guys had won it. And when he won, Bradley Whitford, who had won the previous year for Noel, the energy that went through his body of how happy he was. Now, it's worth noting again, he had won one.
He had
so
won
maybe
already.
He didn't need one. But I truly think like they were so happy for John Spencer that, and the Golden Girls, every one of them had won, all four of them, and three of them for best lead actress. So they were always against each other. And I always felt like they were very happy to cheer for each other.
But it's because they won.
Well, okay, but when Bea Arthur, I believe she won first, I felt like Betty White and Rue McClanahan were thrilled, even though he hadn't won yet.
Listen, they're all lovely, but Bea Arthur was the best actress. No, I guess so.
That's a whole other topic.
Wait, but here's also, like, what about the Friends? They all never won, or Lisa Kudrow won?
Jennifer Aniston and Lisa Kudrow won.
Do you think they were really happy for them?
No.
I don't either.
No.
And I think they all loved each other so much, truly. Like, I don't think that's fake. But I think they're like, what the heck?
Lorraine Bracco's biggest mistake, she should have put herself in for supporting actress.
That's their choice?
That's their choice. With the Oscars, I think the Oscars chooses. I'm not positive. But with the Emmys, I know it's them. They choose two episodes and they choose their category. To bring up The West Wing, I know that because Allison Janney, when she started to realize, wait a minute, I might lose supporting actress to Stockard Channing, she put herself in for lead actress and then won.
Right. But then that was also, you've said this on this podcast, that was also so Stockard Channing could win.
But she chose it. She chose, I'm going to move.
Okay, hold on a second. So if I'm Lorraine Bracco, though, I put my hat in as lead actress for this episode. No?
But it's not by episode, it's by the series. You get to choose the episode that you feel will do best for you. And you get two. You get two a season.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
But she is not the lead. Her name shouldn't come first. It's in the theme song, it's James Gandolfini, Lorraine Bracco, Edie Falco. Even that's wrong, but she was name recognition.
Right.
But that's wrong. She's not the lead actress of this show.
Yeah.
She would win. She would have won Best Supporting Actress. I don't know who the cat. I didn't do that research. I'm not going to right now. But she would have won.
Just because you know
she would have. There's no doubt about it.
Janice with the metal detector just made me laugh out loud.
Yes, I agree.
That's just so funny. That was like, what is Janice doing now? That's funny.
And him calling her out on it.
Love it. How did he know?
Because he knows her. Because again.
Right. Good sibling scenes in this whole season.
I have no idea if this was on purpose, but Melfi's attacker is named Jesus Rossi, R-O-S-S-I. In
rapist.
Goodfellas,
you could say it. Rapist. He's a rapist. Okay.
Lorraine Bracco is cheated on by her husband in Goodfellas by Janice Rossi, R-O-S-S-I.
I feel like that was chosen, but I
maybe
not, I don't know. That's a weird parallel.
A little nod.
It's a little weird parallel to draw.
It's there.
It is there. You're right. And we see it. That's what you say about literature, right? If we see it, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Janice drinking vodka while she plays a guitar. Was that like left over by the Russians in the house? I found that funny that she was just like drinking straight vodka and then the Russians came to beat her up. That was funny. Well, not funny.
That is good.
Quirky. Like, I don't mean like haha. Like, fun, not funny like a clown, you know? Like, that's not what I mean.
Right. Hey, Johnny Sachs got a condo in Point Pleasant.
That should have gone under That's Us.
Us. I put
we grew up next to Point Pleasant, everybody. Yeah. That's the boardwalk. I would think that's our boardwalk. I think that's our boardwalk. Christian's friend. Okay, follow me on this journey. Christian's friend at work's cousin lives next door to Johnny Sack's house. And when it was being filmed, in a later episode, the guy's backyard is shown.
Oh, that is cool. No, that is cool. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's late. I was laughing because I was like, okay, I mean, this is kind of like, it's interesting.
I'm sorry. No, that is exciting. No, I'm sorry. Whatever. I sound less enthused because it's hot. I can't put the ceiling fan on in my office because it makes a hum and I'm starting to sweat.
Why is your house that hot?
Because I'm upstairs. It's always hot in this room. And I usually have the fan blasting. Okay. And it's just, and I'm tired. You keep me up late. Anyway. Okay. Is this the episode that you love Tony the most?
I think you have to ask me that at the end of this entire journey.
You got it.
Journey.
There's a big blooper in this episode. You can't read in dreams.
Why do you know that?
Like, do you want to know why I know that?
I do.
You want to know why I know that?
I do.
Because in one of the best episodes of Batman the Animated Series.
Oh my God.
Bruce Wayne goes to pick up a book and it's blurry. It's all scrambled. And then he realizes that the Mad Hatter has him in a dream. And that's how he figures it out. And he says, you can't read in a dream because dreams are on one side of the brain and readings on the other. Now, you're thinking, okay, that's a cartoon. That's a stupid reason. No, but Little Joe looked that up. And it's true.
Little Joe looked that up.
So next time you think that you're reading in a dream, you're wrong.
Cartoon is so good.
So good.
I think
I've had two different people say they want to do that.
Best Batman?
Well, it could be the best Batman. Honestly, it's definitely the best cartoon ever made.
Oh, that's not even up for discussion. But I think it's up there with like best Batmans made. I mean, it's definitely why we Mark have Harley. Hamill. It's why we have Harley Quinn.
Who just passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, a few months ago. Not even a few months ago. I've had two people of different parts of my life say to me, I want to come on First, Last, Best and do Batman the Animated Series.
You have to choose?
No, I'll have them both on. I don't care. We'll do it.
Because they want to do it with you because they know that's your shit?
Maybe. I don't know. Actually, no. Because one of them's a former student. I don't think they know that I'm that obsessed with Batman.
Your entire classroom is covered with Batman shit.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
By the way, like love reading, and it's like a picture of Batman. For like everything is Batman.
And by the way, if you don't know what I'm talking about, First, Last, Best is another podcast I do where I take one TV show and talk about it in three episodes, the pilot, the finale, and the best episode. Moving on, I have two more quick
things. I'm going to guest star for The Sopranos.
Sure. Janice saying, before Richie died, I was functioning at a very high level. Might be in the top five best lines of dialogue in literature, not just The Sopranos.
You didn't even put it in your favorite lines, though.
Oh, I didn't. But it wasn't, no, because it's not a great line. It's a great concept. It's a great character flaw to think. What do you mean? What's high level?
Wait, I went, no, and then Tony's rich.
Right?
Like, really just making a face like, what?
Right. But all right. And then finally, kind of a downer, but Gigi says when they that my favorite line, one of my favorite lines where he says, you got to pay the property tax. And they start going off on what they should use taxes for. And he throws out there, we should fight terrorism. Mm-hmm. That is the second time in this season that they've pretty much foreshadowed 9/11. 9/11 will not happen for another 6 months.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I'm just going to say that, like, terrorism still existed before 9/11.
No, I know.
It's not like the word terrorism was, like, coined when 9/11 happened. And I'm laughing because it's like, it still was a thing.
You keep saying
they, like, foreshadowed. Listen, the FBI thing, that, I'll give that one to you. Because, like, that was, like, our privacy. Where does that go? I give it to you. This one...
But America was not talking about terrorism the way that they were post 9/11.
Sure, but it still existed.
He's like, fuck, Gigi, who are you? What are you talking about? And you just, what? You're an expert on this shit? I don't, it just felt very, very weird. But anyway, that's my anything else for, you know, one of the most painful but amazing episodes of this series.
I agree. It's a great... It's a great episode. Let's say that. Hard watch. Great episode. And
I'll be curious.
The next two are going to be just like this.
And I'll be curious after we get to the third one.
Yeah.
I'll definitely want to know which one do you think was the hardest watch? Because it, I mean, I think the next one is okay for a number of reasons that we'll get into. But the last one's rough. You could argue that the third one of this trinity is the worst one.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's definitely cover that when we get to it, because I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Like, I need to watch them again through that lens. Okay. Well, Joseph, this was fun.
Sure. I mean, fun's all relative.
It's always
sure.
fun chatting with you.
It is. It is.
All right. Thanks to our listeners for analyzing season 3, episode 4, Employee of the Month with us. That's all from us for now. And we'll talk to you soon when we discuss the next episode, season 3, episode 5, Another Toothpick, with our special guest, Nick Norcia.
I love Nick Norcia. I know. Do you love Nick Norcia?
We'll get to it. That makes it sound like I don't love Nick Norcia. I think I was really, really too little to remember, like, to have an opinion. Like, I love Nick Norcia because you love, like, because he's a person from your past, I guess, is what I'm.
You're going to love him.
Yeah, of course. Like, I'm not worried about it. I needed to clarify that because my hesitation. Don't like him. But that's not the case. This has been The Sibling Sit Down. Thanks for listening to The Sibling Sit Down. Please remember to like or follow the show on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. So you never forget about it.